Of je nou ervaring hebt of niet, samen mediteren is krachtig en mooi. En hoe fijn is het om verschillende smaken te proeven? Kijk, de basis is gewaar zijn van je gedachten. Dat is mediteren, maar dat kan je op verschillende manieren doen. Dat kan je, hè, de oude manier, met mantra's en toestanden, zoals Swami het gaat doen. Of je gaat juist een beetje, nou ja, zoals Merel Teunis en Christine Beijnen van Cosmic Life het gaan doen. Het op de manifestatie manier doen. Wat hebben we nog meer? We hebben de Transcendente Reis van Marieke van Meijeren. We hebben de Oer-Dokzen meditatie. Dat zal vooral een hoop stilte zijn, denk ik. Met Jan Geurts. Mike Upilacic, de man van de Meditations app. Her Meditation Moments, waar hij zelf natuurlijk die fijne stem heeft. Maar ook Faya Laurens, die is erbij. Robert Bridgman. We hebben ademexperts, Koen de Jong en op zijn handpan natuurlijk Casper van der Meulen. Jesse Jazz is erbij, Roy Martina, Hielke Bonnema. Ik ga ze toch echt niet weer allemaal opnoemen. Maar ik nodig je uit om erbij te zijn. Van 1 tot 10 mei, meditatie, helemaal gratis. Geef je op via koekeroe.nl/meditatie.
Almost 50, Dave.
Almost 50? Look, I identify as my chronological age. No, I identify as my biological age. So I'm 11 and a quarter years younger by lab test than what the calendar says. So in this world where apparently you're allowed to decide that you are whatever gender you are, I'm 38 and a quarter. Thank you very much.
Oh, that's great. I don't know. No, I don't you know, you don't know him. But my first guest on this podcast was Emil Rautenband. He was like, he worked with Tony Robbins. He's like an NLP guy. And he just did what you just said. Like, my passport has to change.
Yes.
Because the age isn't correct.
There you go. What I really tell people, and I'll be celebrating this year, is my 28% birthday.
Okay.
Because I'm working really hard to tell the cells in my body that they're only 28% of the way through the minimum duty cycle for this piece of hardware. And that means I'm going to live to at least 180.
Yeah, so the 180, yeah.
That's where that 28% comes from. And 180 is actually not crazy. Because the world's best today is 120. There's actually 120-year-olds still walking, just barely, under their own power. So if that's our current best, when they were born, there weren't cars.
Okay. But if you think through it then, how old will Anna and Ellen be then?
Ah, my kids. I believe that assuming we don't consume all of our topsoil with weird government agendas and a comet doesn't hit the planet, and both of those are substantial risks, but let's assume that that doesn't happen. There's a very good chance that people who are young today can live for many hundreds of years.
Yeah, so if you have to, so Anna Ellen will be like 200.
If they want to be. And the real thing here is we all ought to be able to die at a time and by a method of our choosing. So if you want to die from old age, you should be allowed to. And if you want to be a Viking and jump off a cliff when you're done, you should be allowed to. You have personal autonomy over your own meat, and no one has a right, government or church or other human being, to interfere with that.
That's a great open mind. And of course, I knew you have. Dave Asprey is here, the father of biohacking. I don't know if you like that name.
Okay. Some news company started saying that, but it's true. I coined the term and my name's in the English dictionary for that. So
okay.
I'll own that.
Yeah. You're talking about a nuclear thing. I read somewhere that your grandmother was like a nuclear engineering.
She was indeed. So, she's 100 now.
Oh, really? She's still alive?
Yes.
Oh, my God. Oh, wow. That's really a family thing then. Not only the age, but to discover things.
Yeah, her husband, my grandfather, was a physical chemist as well, who helped to discover the process was still used to this day to purify uranium. Mm-hmm. Plutonium is called the Purex process. So I come from a family of nerds, just deep nerds. And I decided I would study engineering when I was young, and I failed out of physics. And I said, physics sucks, but if I study computer science, I don't have to take physics until later. So that was how I became a computer hacker.
Yeah.
And that led to me becoming a biohacker eventually.
Yeah, because, you weren't that healthy at that time. And you began to experiment. And then, your most famous thing, the bulletproof coffee came. And there are now a lot of other things you're busy with, great things. But let's first talk about what maybe a lot of people will say. Just live and follow your intuition and do what's good.
Am I allowed to swear?
Absolutely. This is Holland. You can fucking say everything.
Excellent. So let me just say, fuck that. Okay.
Yeah.
Here's because, why.
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
I'm all about intuition. I train my intuition. But there's a huge part of you that you don't know about. How old are you?
I'm like 45.
45. Okay, that's chronological.
In my passport, yeah.
Obviously, there you go. Yeah, what's your passport age? That's what we'll start asking. Yeah. So as we age, there's a gap between when something happens and when your brain gets notified. Not when you become aware of it, but just when your brain starts to wiggle. It's called the P300D. So when you're 18, a quarter second after something happens, your brain gets some signal, and then a little while later, you figure out what the signal means. Mm-hmm. And by the time you're 45, you're to around a third of a second. Unless you're me, I still have the 18-year-old response time because I hacked my brain. Mm-hmm. But what that means is there's a third of a second where stuff is happening in your body that you cannot know about, at least a part of you that's inside your brain. So you're saying, oh, I'm just going to do whatever. There is an automated system in charge of you that gets to do whatever a third of a second before you decide, unless you train it. And that's why you better get on top of this upgrading yourself thing. Otherwise, you'll be at the mercy of an ancient operating system that runs all life that makes you act like a jerk.
So, okay, you say a lot of things, and but then you say, yeah, well, then you say something like God or the universe or whatever you call it didn't make us that good.
No, humans are a failed species.
Okay.
Just look around. It's time to upgrade ourselves or get the hell out of the way. Okay, life on Earth will be here long after we're gone. There are life forms 2 miles below the crust that don't even need oxygen to survive. And we just figured that out a few years ago. So Mother Nature will be fine because she has an infinite time. We have a very tiny timeline. And seriously, we're in need of a big upgrade. Mm-hmm. And it's not just about how we think. It's about how we feel before we think. Because what we're doing, especially when we're hungry, and tackling hunger is the easiest one to do.
Yeah.
But when we're hungry, when we're afraid, when there are other things going on, and there's an order of operations for all life in this that we can talk about, we end up just operating on pure reactivity, and then we make up a story that we decided to do it. Would you believe that?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I think that's a true fact.
And if someone's listening to this and you're saying, wait a minute, well, most of us have leaned against a hot stove. And then you look at, oh, you know, that's pretty hot. I smell bacon. I think I'll move my hand now. No, what you do is you jerk your hand away and you take credit for pulling your hand away as if you did that. But you didn't. Something did. And you're like, ha, ha, ha. Well, that same thing, it's actually conscious. And it's exceptionally fast and it's exceptionally dumb. Mm-hmm. And we are exceptionally slow and we're very intelligent.
Yeah.
So there's a fast, dumb system doing stuff that causes us to do very bad things to each other in the world.
But then, Dave, and I want to keep this positive, but then we're doomed.
Unless we decide we're going to change it.
Yeah.
And that's what meditation's about. That's why we have personal development. Frankly, that's why you eat better. Because that system that runs us, it's not just humans. It's the same system that runs all life. And you can design it. It doesn't actually take a computer science or artificial intelligence person to do that. No. You ever play one of those video games where, you know, you're God, you get to build a city can, or whatever? So let's pretend we're going to build a single-celled life form that's going to win. Okay. Step one, by the way, it's not smart. It doesn't have a big brain, so you can't make it really, really complex. So step one would be run away from, kill, or hide from scary things, right? Pretty good rule. Otherwise, you get eaten, you lose the game, right?
Always, yeah.
Okay. So you're going to put all of your energy, 10 times more energy into that than anything else, just to make sure you don't lose the game. Okay. Next up, eat everything. Because a famine is probably going to come along. And if you ate everything before competitors did, okay, there you go. So these are all the F words that are kind of at the core of my work. So there's fear and there's food. And what else does life have to do to stay around forever? It's also an F word.
Well, I hope fun.
That's before that, but it's also fun.
Oh, fuck, maybe.
There you, I was thinking fertility, but if you just wanted to get
okay,
all...
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, fuck. So, fear, food, fuck.
Yeah.
In order. Did I just explain every bad thing you've ever done in your life?
Well, mostly. Yeah, yeah.
Seriously, procrastination, that's
yeah,
fear.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
Literally,
yeah, yeah,
every yeah. bad thing wow. we do... is the operating system of Mother Nature. And it yeah. operates in that third of a second before we think about it. And then we go, oh, look, no, there's a good reason I should go on that really bad date that I know I shouldn't go on. But, you know, and yeah, it's a good idea to eat the whole pizza. Of course it is, right? So that's the voice in our head. Yeah. It comes from Mother Nature trying to stay alive. And to keep this from getting dark, and I am not a dark person at all, there is a fourth F word, and it's friend. And all life on Earth does this. And you see, you know, turtles turning the one that's upside down yeah. right side up. You see humans.
That's the connection with, yeah. with all of it.
We'll yeah. help babies yeah. who aren't ours. We'll take care of an old person crossing the street. We'll do all kinds of things. And you don't have to think to do that. In all life, whether it's, you know, yogurt working together to make a creamy, delicious breakfast,
yeah.
whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All life works together. But it doesn't do that if it's afraid, if it's malnourished, or if it's lacking love. And so our job is to desensitize ourselves to fear so we don't have to be afraid when there's nothing to be afraid of. And what's happening now, these dumb cells that don't know anything about the world around us, they feel fear and then we make up a story. What if you learn to own that and to control that system? And hunger, I used to weigh 50% more than I weigh now. I was obese. I still have stretch marks. And I was hungry all the time. I had cravings all the time. And I've helped people lose millions of pounds. My first big book was called The Bulletproof Diet. It's yeah. where I introduced this idea of bulletproof coffee.
Yeah.
If you eat something and then you think about food for the next 4 hours, you ate the wrong thing. It's really straightforward. You should never have a need or desire to snack.
Right.
And when you learn what food works for your biology, you walk around going, I can't believe I feel this good. And the voice in your head, and there's a study on this, about a third of the thoughts most people have are about what's for their next meal. What if a third of the thoughts in your head were, what can I do to make the world a better place
yeah.
instead of tacos?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Right? Yeah. let's get the book because, of course, I've got it here. And I was wondering...
Oh, you have the Dutch version.
Yeah, of course.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, my English isn't that good. But now in 2022, do you think your opinion on some parts changed or...
So this book came out in 2014.
Yeah.
And I just recorded a class based on this book for my online community. It's called The Upgrade Collective. And I went through it. And at the end of maybe recording 20 hours of lectures and rereading the book,
yeah.
I thought to myself, I'm really good. Here's what happened. I read through it and said, man, in the first chapter, I predicted like five of the major things that would happen in the last 10 years of food. But yeah. this book was at the start of that. Yeah. You've heard people talk about lectins in plants. That's in chapter one. Oxalates, my war against kale is fine. I'm starting to win. Kale is gross and it's bad for you.
Yeah.
So that's in there and it's coming omega-6 oil. So this works and people have lost at least 2 million pounds on this diet mm-hmm. and it's stuck around for a long time. So there's... not a lot. In fact, I was looking for obvious mistakes. I think it's going to stand the test of time.
There was one thing, because I reread it, of course, because I'm ask some questions.
You're curious,
but,
right?
Yeah. And then I was reading about the whole, is the English word melatonin?
Yes.
And then, but to be honest, you also describe how too much isn't that good. But what I learned, and of course, I have a lot of teachers, is don't take that as a supplement. Maybe when you have like a time thing difference in flying to another country. So that was
It's a tough one. So melatonin is a hormone. And it comes from methylating serotonin, which people call the happiness hormone. So if you have enough serotonin and then you have the ability to turn into melatonin, it can work. But we tend to have much less melatonin now than we ought to have because we have not just the electric lights, but we have LED lights that powerfully suppress it. So you probably, unless you're like me and you have red lights at home and you wear special glasses at night.
Like you do, yeah.
You're probably not going to have enough melatonin. There's also a bunch of newer studies now talking about melatonin and the pineal gland and melatonin specifically. And I don't know, in Europe, am I allowed to say the name of the virus that in the US gets you immediately censored if you talk about it?
Oh, no.
So censorship hasn't come here yet?
No, not yet.
So people who are on melatonin and get COVID tend to have better outcomes. But literally, I couldn't say that in the US anymore.
Okay,
they shadow ban you on social if you do
that. Well, you can say here. I hope. But, well, and that's, I really enjoy it because there are a lot of biohackers who are so busy with hacking the system, which is, of course,
it's fun and great.
But what I don't like is that, and you are not saying that, that they are thinking, oh, you don't have to sleep that much. Then you're really late.
And I'm going to have to own that. When I started Bulletproof, I was working full time as a vice president at a computer security company. Mm-hmm. And I slept 4 hours a night for almost 2 years straight. And I started a company that's done more than $500 million in revenue because of that. I don't regret it.
No.
But if you're going to do it, you can break yourself. And it wasn't good for me. But if you know what you're doing, you can do that. And what you can do is you can get less sleep, but so much higher quality sleep that it's okay. So it's not about getting as little as possible. That's bad. But the people who live the longest, they sleep 6.5 hours a night. 8 hours a night is a made-up number. It's actually not real. And people who require that to be rested provably die more often than people who need less sleep. And maybe it's genetic? No. It's that healthy people need less sleep.
Yeah.
So if you have less toxins and you have more recovery,
and I think
it works.
I think there will be a difference between man and woman.
Probably a monthly cyclical difference.
Yeah, okay.
But the studies that I've seen didn't say overall that there was a difference between men and women.
I've got a lot of questions. Okay. And now there's this question about this sleep, so it's a good time to ask this. Oh, yeah, it's just the question of Jessica. Hacks for better quality of sleep.
All right. Best URL of my entire life. Sleepwithdave.com. I will, for free, I will teach you everything there is in the shortest possible amount of time. So there are a lot of things, but the most important one is your bedroom needs to be blacked out, like a cave. And people say, oh, but I had a little light on, or I have blackout curtains, but light comes around them. No, a study in Japan of 800 people found that the amount of light from a street light coming around a blackout curtain increased depression by 69%. So it's not that you can't go to sleep. It's that the quality of your sleep isn't very good, which leads to your brain not working as well, which leads to depression. So what I would like to say is, especially here, and I live in Canada where it also is light very, very late, you've just got to do something about that, which means pay extra for curtains. Second thing, eat dinner earlier. The longer the time between dinner and sleep, the better your quality of sleep. And those two things transform everything unless you have bright lights on before bed. And that's the third big thing. It only takes a few seconds of that bright bathroom light or the bright kitchen light to completely turn off melatonin production. There are companies that make blue blocking glasses, but they don't work very well because blue is one of three colors of light that wakes you up. So they allow your body to make melatonin, but unfortunately they don't fix your sleep quality. So my company called True Dark makes the ones that are patent pending for all the different colors of light and angles of light. And if you can't get those, there are glasses that at least are red instead of orange or yellow, and they work way better than blue blockers.
Of course, in the description, I will put the link. And I'm really glad you went to my bathroom downstairs.
Yep.
So you were walking down my sleeping room. And when I came here, I was like, there aren't any windows. But now I think, yes, there aren't any windows.
Yeah. For your bedroom, it's so tempting to have this beautiful view.
Yeah.
Here's why that might be a good thing, though. When you wake up, the first 20 minutes, you need to get sunlight in your eyes. Mm-hmm. And that means no glasses.
No.
That means no windows if you can avoid it. So just go outside.
Yeah.
Or at least open a window. And the reason you do that is that the angle and color of morning sun tells the part of your brain called the SCN that the day has started. And if you do that, you'll go to bed much better that night. So if you want to sleep well, get light in the morning.
I can't lie. This was a very funny thing.
I wasn't doing that too.
Yeah.
I'm like, who is this attractive person slinking past us on the floor? Yeah. Oh, that was joy.
That was so great. Enough about sleep. There are so many things I would like to talk with you. How spiritual are you, Dave?
I am really spiritual. That system we talked about, those four F words that controls all life, I believe that those are the antennas of reality. And if you heard of quantum biology, mm-hmm. and I heard you on the episode with Joy Martina talking about intuition and all of that. Well, these ancient embedded sensors in our cells are mitochondria. And people think that these little things are power plants in our cells, but that's not accurate. They sense the environment, and then based on that, they decide what to do. They can make power, they can make inflammation, they can make protein, they can make hormones, they can make neurotransmitters. So they're actually the puppet masters mm-hmm. of your body. They also are exceptionally sensitive to the environment. In fact, anything that your brain or your nervous system picks up is originally sensed by a mitochondria. So what ends up happening there is these guys are a distributed system that is connected to all life on the planet. And that is the nature of intuition. That's also the nature of manifesting reality. Because, and this is provable in real science, that before something happens, it's a probability. It's a waveform. And when an observer observes it, well, newsflash, you cannot be the observer because you don't see things until a third of a second after they happen. Maybe you could program that network inside your body to be more aware of the environment, to look for things that you want to happen in your life. And when you do that, they will happen because they collapse the waveform. It's a programmable antenna for reality that creates power and creates awareness for you.
Wow. And was there a specific moment you realized this? Because I'm really thinking about the time I used it once, ayahuasca, and get this, exactly this feeling, not in these words, because you described it really well. I know a lot of biohackers are also experimenting with plant medicine and things like that.
I'm a little bit concerned about that. And okay. I intentionally put plant medicine in the world of biohacking. I talk about my ayahuasca journey in the late 90s in Peru in the jungle. And I'm certainly not opposed. I go to Burning Man and things like that. But you really ought to do other things first, like EMDR for trauma work. You ought to learn tantric sex techniques. You should learn holotropic breathing. You should do neurofeedback and heart rate variability feedback. Yeah. And if those aren't working, then start with the soft drugs. You start with things like GHB and ketamine, which work really well. And maybe you progress to mushrooms, which, in fact, first time I had those was here in Amsterdam.
Okay. Who would
have thought? Right. And after that, maybe there's LSD. And after that, ayahuasca. Okay. Because there's different levels. Actually, before ayahuasca, I would do DMT. So there's these different levels. And there's also levels of spiritual risk that don't get talked about in the world of biohacking. And I think that's dangerous.
And what is the spiritual risk? Because what I think is that people, they cannot integrate it, or they feel it for a small time and then they're back to reality and then it's all gone. But what are really talking about the dangerous
thing. A substantial number of people who just take up a meditation practice go crazy and have to be institutionalized. They never talk about that in the worlds of meditation. But if you go to the monasteries where I learned from the masters in Nepal and Tibet, mm-hmm. they talk about that. They warn you that the faster the path of meditation, the more the risk of going crazy is. But they also have monks and people trained to deal with that. And when you do a plant medicine with a true shaman, a medicine person who's taken it for decades, they know before you take it whether it's going to do that to you, and they know what to do if you start going off the path. But if you get one of these, neo shamans, well, I did ayahuasca four times And I think I met Jesus, either that or it was Heal. I couldn't tell. They look almost the same and I was high. But anyway, you know, I'm pretty sure I met him. So now I'm a shaman, right? That's not how it works. And that's where it gets really dangerous, because you're opening up a lot of things. And I have seen people both in intense neurofeedback, in holotropic breathing, and with plant medicines recall childhood abuse they were entirely unaware of until suddenly they could notice it. But if you're not prepared for that, or you're with the wrong people, it's very unsettling. So it's not a bad thing, but start with the ones that are least likely to lead you down that path. And then when you get real spiritual and you talk to the shaman who taught me the first time I did plant medicine, I said, look, I'm done. I did ayahuasca. I'm feeling fine. I didn't throw up. The other person I'm with is still in the middle of their thing. So I'm just going to go for a walk in nature. I just feel good. And this old guy with a carved jaguar head, he looks at me and goes, don't you dare. And I said, what do you mean? Like, I'm fine. Like, look, I can touch my nose. And he said, now, do you see the circle of stones? And I said, yeah. And he said, those are not to keep you in. That's to keep other stuff out. And when you're this open, those things will stick to you and they're really hard to get out. Now, he comes from a lineage that's only like 5,000 years old. So I told him to go pound sand. No, I listened to him. I stayed there, right?
Yeah.
And that's what you have to do.
Yeah.
So I just think that maybe we should look at the old teachings, because
the ancient
wisdom. They learned something.
Oh, I'm so glad you say this. So are you busy with that, aware with this, because you have like a big platform and you have a lot of websites, you have your own podcast, of course, The Human Upgrade. So yeah, are you
I've had, you know, masters of Chinese medicine. In fact, the guy that Dr. Strange was based on the show, and I've had various Buddhist masters, the leader of the Lutheran Church in the US. And I'm actually looking now at starting a spiritual focus podcast, because it's such an important part of biohacking. Yeah. What I have found, in fact, Shaman Durek is a friend who's marrying the Princess of Norway.
Okay.
And was on the show a while ago. And when I worked with him and he worked with me, and we're friends, he started using some of the biohacking techniques, like putting butter in coffee or the glasses. And like every other guru and master I've ever worked with, when you turn on their mitochondrial function, immediately their spiritual powers get better. And I've had calls from a guy named Tilak, who was probably the most famous spiritual guru from Indonesia.
Mm-hmm.
And he, Dave, I feel like I got my brain back. He's older. Like, this is so good. And they're measuring his brain waves at the Noetic Institute and all. So biohacking works better when you're spiritual. So you get a bunch of young guys and young women, which makes me really happy, because they're turning all the stuff on that I didn't have when I was in my 20s, because I was obese and my brain was failing.
Yeah.
Right. And all of a sudden they're saying, I can do my personal development now. And all of a sudden they're like, I'm 35 and I've dealt with all my trauma and I'm still young and I can go change the world. And it's so much easier that way than slogging through it and just being in pain and suffering all the time, which is kind of what I did.
Yeah. So you say if it goes hand in hand, it is really powerful.
Yeah.
I ask you to think about three books that gave you inspiration for your life.
All right.
I don't know. Do you still read a lot of books or more like?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I listen to a lot of books now.
Yeah.
Because, well, it's sometimes just easier to do other things at the same time. But
my sponsor would love that you say so. So that's great.
There you go.
That's
right.
Storytell. Yeah.
I was really thinking about it. One of them is Think and Grow Rich.
Of course. Right? Napoleon Hill. Yeah.
So when I was 16, I read this book.
Okay.
And I wrote down a goal. I said, I'm going to make $1 million by the time I'm 23. And I wrote it specifically, you know, in liquid assets or something. And when I was 23, I totally didn't make $1 million. I was in Entrepreneur Magazine. I was the first guy to sell anything over the internet. And it took me until I was 26 to make $6 million. So I think it worked. Of course, I didn't say, and keep it.
No.
So I lost it when I was 28. So,
always think about
You should write those intentions real carefully, guys, if you read Napoleon Hill. So yeah, I made and lost $6 million before I was 28. And that was actually back when dollars were worth something that would be closer to $20 million in today's currencies. So
Napoleon Hill.
Napoleon Hill, for sure. And there's so much value in that book, including the stuff about specifically, there's a whole chapter on sex.
Now, I was just, energy. I was
you
just,
gotta do that.
Okay. The whole transmuting.
We'll yeah. get there. I have data for you on that.
Okay, then.
But you want to do the other two books? And then
no,
we'll go
no,
back
no.
Some...
First, right, so let's get this
all
one.
All about because the sex. All right.
No, because this, well, for a long time, I was really, I didn't know, because it's really like an old book, of course. So I really didn't know what he meant. Was he like, okay, I shouldn't jerk off anymore and keep the energy, or I will have to do it every day? And I was Googling a lot of it and really...
So you looked at a lot of porn sites, is that what I'm hearing?
No. I think that's one of the good things. I immediately understood, stop with that.
Okay. And
of course I talked about this a lot in this podcast. So,
okay, good.
Yeah.
So I heard about this from Napoleon Hill and a few other things, and the Taoists write about this a lot.
Yeah.
And Taoism is actually about not just reaching enlightenment, it's about immortality and living forever.
Yeah.
And they say that there's an equation for men in how frequently you can ejaculate and still maintain your health. And it's age. I think they mean chronological age. They didn't really know about that. But anyway, age in years minus 7 divided by 4.
And so
age in years minus 7 divided by 4. So for you, it's 45 minus 7 is 38 divided by 4, which is what, about 8, 9, something like that, 8 or 9. So that says you should not ejaculate more than once every 9 days. Doesn't mean you can't have sex more than that. It doesn't mean that you can't even have orgasms more than that. You just can't ejaculate. And there's a little footnote. When you do have an orgasm, they said you have to keep it to less than an hour. So as a biohacker, I read this about 10 years ago, and I said, this sounds like utter bullshit. I'm going to prove them wrong.
Okay.
So yeah, you should always go up against thousands of years of people living in caves taking notes, because, you know. So I started tracking, and I took a daily happiness score. Like, how much energy do I have? Do I like my relationships? Do I like my job? Do I like my life? And I tracked ejaculation. I tracked sex. And after a year of this, including the other thing, if you want to live forever, only ejaculate once every 30 days. So for a year, I tested ejaculating whenever I wanted, going for 30 days or going for 8 days. And what I found is that there's absolutely an ejaculation hangover. So the day after you orgasm, that's why, you know, the "are you going to call me in the morning" thing is so famous. Well, no, actually guys aren't. And John Gray, the guy from Mars and Venus, who's a dear friend, has written a lot about the testosterone drop that happens after you ejaculate.
Yeah.
So what happens if you say, you know, I'm going to have sex as a man, but I'm not going to ejaculate? Well, you'll have a lot more sex, because you're pretty much horny all the time. Mm-hmm. Well, that energy is valuable energy. That's the third F word, right?
Yeah.
There's fear, food, there's fucking.
Yeah.
Well, if you aren't afraid, you're not hungry, and you have tons of energy, man, you're gonna go change the world. And when I published this data, and I talked about the reasons you might wanna really just, it's called semen retention or transmutation of energy.
Yeah,
I had dozens of people reach out and say, Dave, I just got a massive promotion. I started 2 new companies, especially if you're under 40. Oh my God, it's totally life-changing. And if you're masturbating and watching porn, it's not gonna work.
No.
But here's the thing, you actually could masturbate and watch porn, although I don't think porn is good for you for other reasons, as long as you don't ejaculate. So.
That's the whole transmuting thing
of Napoleon Hill. But for women who are listening as well, it's not the same. And what the Taoists say is that a woman walks away from sex undiminished. And there's lots of studies that show for women that frequent orgasms are associated with EQ, emotional intelligence, and all kinds of other stress relieving and anxiety things. So it turns out the rules are different for men and women.
Yeah.
And so I couldn't find a published equation for like the proper spacing or number of orgasms for women. So I had to write one. And I figured it out. You know what it is?
Yeah, of course.
So it's the number of orgasms until she feels like she's going to die, plus 2.
Okay,
that's the best. And I've really, in surveys, asked dozens of women, and all of them laugh and then nod. So I'm just gonna think I got that one right. But
great. Oh, Dave. Oh man.
You didn't think I was gonna go there, did you?
And you experimented a lot with Tantra as well, I think. Then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great. Okay, book number two.
All right, book number two for me is called Headstrong.
Headstrong.
And this is a book about how to make your brain work better, how to raise your IQ, how to have a brain that works really, really well at any age. This is why my brain has the same awareness of the environment as an 18-year-old would.
But is that, what have you learned about in this book? Is it about food? Is it about...
It's a comprehensive book, but it's mostly about energy.
Okay.
And what it comes down to is that every day you take about 30 pounds of air, was that 15 kilos or something, mm-hmm. of air, and some food,
yeah,
and you combine them and you make electricity. And in your brain, what you want to do is be really good at doing that so you have more power in your brain. And that's kind of step one from Headstrong. And then step two is, what if you could waste less of that power thinking about fear, food, and fucking? Because you're now efficiently allocating it. If I sound like a computer science guy, that's because I studied artificial intelligence. But it's really straightforward.
Yeah.
If the thoughts are going into, oh my God, is that a croissant? Oh my God, is that a pair of attractive legs? Like, oh my God, is that scary? It's a government. All of those things, lose your mind. We call that losing your mind. So what if you could program your mind the way you want it to? There's a technology for that. It's called meditation. And there's a newer version of that called neurofeedback. In my 40 years of Zen program now, we've had 1,500 high-resolution brain scans of top-performing, like spiritual leaders, top-performing entrepreneurs, celebrities, people who have done something unusual. And we can now go in and train your brain mm-hmm. to turn off notifications, just like on your phone. Everybody knows by now that if you let every app pop up all the time, you can't use your phone. Well, every intrusive thought, that mean voice in your head, is just a bunch of bad notifications from an ancient operating system that needs a serious upgrade. You can turn those off with any of those practices.
So you say neurofeedback for everybody.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
You want to be the one in charge of what you do, though. Because here's what governments would do with neurofeedback. In fact, you're getting to the roots of why it's called biohacking. Linus Torvalds is the guy who created Linux, which is an operating system that is probably powering a third of our conversation right now, but you wouldn't know it. It was made by hackers. And they said, you know what? Fuck you, Bill Gates. You won't tell us what Microsoft is doing inside Windows. We don't trust you. We know it's not secure. So we're going to write our own operating system and we're going to make it free so everyone can look inside it. Well, they did that because they know not to trust big companies. Well, biohackers know that you don't trust big companies to put stuff into your body unless they tell you what's inside it with full disclosure, right? Especially things like implants.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right? Yeah.
You're like, who's going to hack your heart thing? I don't know, but I sure would like to know. And I'd also like to know what the code does. So if you let governments or big companies program your brain for you and you don't know what they're programming it to do, and you acknowledge that your brain does something or your body does something in that third of a second, you can see why you want to be the one in charge. So neurofeedback, yes, but you have to work with the right type of technology so that you don't take away your intuition, you don't take away your magic. And that's entirely possible to do. There are many studies now showing that if you study a group of people who meditate, they have special abilities. And if you study a group of randomly selected people, there are no special abilities. So what if you took meditating brains and you trained them as an evil neurofeedback company to become average? You would take the Olympic level athletes and make them average.
Well, to be honest, that was the bit where I was a bit scared about when I started with neurofeedback. That was like, oh, maybe I won't be that creative anymore. And they said no.
I've seen it ruin people's creativity. I've seen it ruin people's sleep.
Yeah.
And I bought my own machine way back in the 90s when this was unheard of, because I saw it cure an autistic kid. And I did 10 sessions with a very early rudimentary system. So I bought one. And after a little while, I realized doing brain surgery on yourself is a bad idea. And that's what this is. I mean, you're literally changing it. So if you break something, you won't know you broke it.
No, exactly.
And you won't know how to fix it. So I, after a while, started 40 Years of Zen, which is a company in Seattle that does all this, because we actually built our own hardware and software for hacking your own brain. But you're in charge of it, not anyone else. And it's run with neuroscientists and facilitators, because if you're the only one doing it, you can only do the most rudimentary things, before you start getting into the danger zone where you can't go back because, you know, you edited your own brain.
But you will do that before you have the thing on your head. You fill in what you would like to change, or how does it work?
Well, when I teach people to do this, there's something called a reset mode. And there's a process, a personal development process that goes with it. And what the neurofeedback is doing is showing you when you're in a state that you're learning. And there's actually a name for the state. And it's one you talked about in the last episode with Joy Martina. It's forgiveness.
Yeah.
So forgiveness isn't about telling someone that you forgive them. It's about you not carrying a grudge against someone else. So forgiveness is what turns off a notification in your head. If every time you see that person, you think about that thing, you feel that, that costs you electricity. It costs you performance. It costs you focus. It costs you peace. So what you want to do is get there. The problem is I could sit here with you and we could do an hour session, and even without neurofeedback, and I could get you to really say that you forgive something. I could get you to believe that you forgive something. And if I put electrodes on your head, I could prove to you that you didn't do it because your ego got in the way.
Exactly.
So lie detector to make sure that you authentically let go of a grudge all the way, so it never triggers you again. And so it's a combination of visualization and neurofeedback. And then there's 2 days of performance tuning. And then if you take your BMW into a performance mechanic, they can change the software. They can make it fire faster. Mm-hmm. You can do that to your brain. So based on your unique brain scan that we take on the first day, we'll look on the fourth and fifth day and say, all right, well, did you want to take advantage of better handling or did you want better acceleration? So we can increase neuron firing speed. We can actually decrease it because it's too hot here, or we can increase the amount of electricity your brain makes, and we can teach it to do that. And this is phenomenal. You couldn't do this 10 years ago. Yeah. It's completely a new world. And for me, my brain works better. Did you hear me say ever? No, I used to stutter a little bit. I used to have a brain that didn't work like this. And it's effortless now. And I write a New York Times bestseller about every 18 months while being a CEO and a podcaster and a dad, and I have 6 companies. I couldn't do any of this when I was 30.
40 Years of Zen, links in the description. And well, thanks for talking about it again, because I really almost forgot it started my whole journey.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and because after that, I was so focused to do this and to start this podcast.
Wow,
and
it's so good.
It really started there, yeah. Okay, so the third book.
I think we were on the second one still, weren't we?
Yeah, but you mentioned the second one.
I did. What was the second one?
The second one was...
Just Think and Grow Rich.
No, that was the first one.
Okay, then what was the second one?
The second one was the brain thing.
Oh, I thought you meant the second book I wrote. I can't recommend my own book. That would be a douchebag move.
Okay.
You tricked me into being a douchebag? Seriously?
Oh, sorry, Dave.
All right. Well, so anyway, I thought you were talking about the second book I wrote. All right, second book from my list. My apologies.
Yeah.
You didn't trick me into anything. I could see what you're doing there. All right, second book is actually going to be 48 Laws of Power. I noticed that on your bookshelf over there.
Yeah.
And I've had the honor of interviewing its author, Robert Greene, a couple times on my show. And his newest book called The Laws of Human Nature is actually better. But when I was 26, I was sitting in a boardroom and I wasn't allowed to speak when the board members were there, but I could at least listen. And I decided that all of them were crazy. Yeah. They didn't do anything that made sense to a semi-autistic engineer like me. And after I read this book, it was like someone parted the veil. And I understood the way these wealthy and powerful people were playing their game. It was a different game than I was playing. I thought the world was rational until I read that book. Totally changed things for me. And I would just encourage everyone, read The Laws of Human Nature. It'll give you a 20-year fast forward on life. And the third one is actually by Neal Stephenson, and it's called Snow Crash.
Snow Crash. So and what's that about?
It is actually a cyberpunk science fiction book.
Okay.
It was written in 1992.
Yeah.
And it's still a fascinating, amazing read. But it predicted most of the last 30 years, and it predicts the ones after that as well. And Neal Stephenson is one of the most gifted writers of our generation. It is just his language. He writes historical fiction about Europe and the Enlightenment, and also wrote cyberpunk, things like this. The reason I bring that up is it helped to shape even the idea of biohacking. He talks about implants. He talks about malware on implants. And those ideas, the future ideas, usually come from science fiction. And there are studies that show that listening to or reading to 20 minutes of fiction a day changes how your brain works. Instead of watching a video, listen to fiction in audio, and it will completely cause your brain to make a picture inside of itself, which exercises neurons that need to be exercised. So pick the kind of fiction you like. I highly recommend anything by Neal Stephenson, but that book made me go, oh my God, what kind of a world are we building? Yeah. What can I do to build something that matters?
Oh, okay. And do you still do that every day?
I do.
Okay.
I listen to audiobooks, and I'm pretty much that genre of cyberpunk I still like when I can find it.
Great, Snow Crash. Let's talk about the rituals you have. I'm really curious because I can imagine you changed over the years a lot in your own morning ritual.
Well, for many years, I was a night owl. In fact, for almost all of my life, I've been going to bed at 2:02 a.m.
Okay.
Yeah. And I've tracked my sleep for about 16 years
now.
Yeah,
I know, yeah.
It was just my natural thing. And now I go to bed around 10:30 in the average night. So I managed to change my circadian rhythm, but there is a genetic basis for early birds and night owls and all. So my morning ritual changed when I was able to wake up earlier. I used to struggle to get to work at 9 because I'm still half asleep. Why would you ever do that?
Mm-hmm.
And now it's not a problem. So I wake up and I don't turn my phone off of airplane mode. I put it in airplane mode when I go to sleep. I use it as part of my sleep tracking system. I wake up, I check my sleep score because I'm curious, like, how did I do last night? And I usually kind of know by now, but it's just great to see and just to note, what did I do in my behavior that could have improved or caused it to be worse? Do I feel great this morning because of my sleep or because of something else? So then I can get more clarity as to what practice is providing the most benefits for me. And after that, it's pretty common for me to do either like a 15-minute audio meditation or breathing exercises, Wim Hof or a similar thing like that. From there, if I'm dropping my kids off at school, I do not turn my phone off of airplane mode until I've dropped them off at school. So I will wake up, I'll take some supplements and some nootropics. I'll drink my new coffee called Danger Coffee.
Danger Coffee, yeah.
Blended with some butter and MCT oil. And that coffee is remineralized. It's a new thing that I've created for coffee because
it gives a lot of electrolytes.
It gives you electrolytes and minerals. Most of the plant foods we eat suck minerals out of our bones and out of our cells. Your brain and your mitochondria can't make energy without these minerals. So putting the minerals back in with the coffee, you actually feel different even from the black coffee.
Yeah.
But I'm sure we probably ship to some parts of Europe, but it's probably very expensive to ship here.
Yeah,
so
anyway,
it's a cool thing, but it's what I do. But here, drink some really good
clean coffee. But do you have plans to make a European...
We'll get here.
Okay, thanks.
For sure.
And when you say, I take some supplements, of course,
it's about 75 or
75.
Yeah.
Every day, 75.
Sometimes it's 50 and sometimes it's 80. Mm. And this is something that I love being able to talk about. Okay. When you reach for a bottle of supplements, your body knows whether you want that day or not. The same way, and I live in an organic farm, so we have sheep and pigs and cows and chickens, and you watch them walk around, and they eat just what they need. So the cow doesn't want
that grass. So you take supplements with your intuition?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I know there's some that I take almost every day, like my vitamin A, D, K, and getting minerals in. Those are pretty much things you do all the time. But there's a bunch of other ones. You know what? I'm so energized right now. I don't want to take that cognitive enhancer that's going to probably put me over the top. Or man, I only slept 4 hours last night and I transitioned 8 time zones. I think I'm going to take half a modafinil this morning, which is a prescription cognitive enhancer and performance enhancer. It's the Limitless drug. And so would I take that every day? Probably not, unless I was writing. And then also, what am I doing today?
Yeah.
Right? Do I need to be dialed in mentally? Or is this more of like a relax and meditate day? And so you choose your state. And once you set your intention for the day, when you reach for the bottle of whatever herb and go, just don't feel it today. And you honor that feeling. But to be able to get to that feeling, you have to be able to shut up enough of the voice in your head that you're paying attention to your body. And that's why any kind of biofeedback, any kind of meditation, heart rate variability biofeedback, neurofeedback, anything that brings bodily awareness, your body knows, but your brain doesn't. So all the brain has to do is listen to the body and it'll tell you.
But if we are talking about the whole science fiction thing, don't you hope that at some day you will wake up and there's this, like this body scan, I don't know how it works, and then there's just this one pill, this one drink with all the supplements in it for that day?
We're getting closer to that.
Yeah.
So my company called Upgrade Labs, it's a franchise. So we're opening this all over North America and we're probably some country licensing over here as well. By the way, ownandupgradelabs.com is where info on that is. And what we're doing there is we're looking at your biology. When you walk in the door, we do a very complex scan of your body that takes 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. And then we write a prescription for which of the biohacking technologies is going to allow you to improve your brain, your cardiovascular, your muscles, or your recovery. Do it way faster than Mother Nature wants.
And with blood or something? Or?
We don't even have to do blood.
No,
we can do it with electricity.
Oh, wow.
Right. And then we tell you when you're there, okay, do this, then do this. But it takes a tiny fraction of the time of going to the gym and the results are better. Sometimes 10 times more effective than going to the gym per minute. And then we say, well, based on what goals, what supplements would make sense? And this is where it starts to get weird. Because if your goal is to be the fastest human on earth, would your supplement stack be different than if your goal was to make sure that you can drink a lot of beer every night and still pass college?
Of course.
Right? Yeah. So there is no one thing. It depends on your intention. It depends on where you want to go and it depends on where you are now. So we're building the AI algorithms for exercise and other biohacking technologies and we're recommending supplements in the app. And there's a variety of other companies that are putting together custom stacks based on what your gut bacteria are doing, based on what your genetics do. There's a company called Viome, V-I-O-M-E, that's doing it with gut bacteria. And I'm an early advisor investor. And there's great wisdom there. And they will actually print, like 3D print your vitamins for you and send them to you every month. Mm. I don't know if they're in Europe yet. No. There's another company called the DNA Company that looks at your genetics. And they do something that's somewhat similar. And which one works better? It depends on who you are and what your goals are. They're both scientifically validated. They're both companies I worked with as an advisor with a very different data set. And what's going on here is we're getting closer to this magic word that Wired magazine talked about 20 years ago. It's called the exposome. Have you ever heard of that?
No.
I saw Bruce Lipton's book over on the shelf. Yeah. Bruce is a friend, you know, the biology of belief. He's the father of epigenetics.
Of course, yeah.
Biohacking definition is the art and science of changing the environment around you and inside of you to have full control of your biology. It's a restatement of epigenetics. And I talked with Bruce about that. So when we're looking at something as profound as that, we're saying, well, how do we know we're going to turn on or off? Well, we're getting to the point that we can use that and we can use a bunch of other things we didn't even know about mm-hmm. to rapidly change things. But it means you have to know who you are, what switches you can turn on or off, what other stuff is in your body and on your body, and then know what the switches are. And it turns out some of them are supplements, some of them are food, but some of them are the oxygen type you're breathing, the angle of light, and things that you and I don't even know about. And for all I know, the angle of Uranus and Venus is highly effective. No one's studied that yet, but maybe it matters. But the exposome is the set of everything you're exposed to over the course of your life. It's like a life-size map of Holland isn't very useful because you'd have to unroll it over the whole country.
Yeah.
So the exposome, though, we're starting to figure out what data from your life is important. And to do that, we have to be able to gather way more data than is important so we can figure out what matters. And we're actually finally there technically. It's the most exciting time ever to be alive.
Yeah. But the thing is, then it's hard to say, take this supplement, watch this food, because, well, like you said, so every person is another person. Everybody has another wishes. Everybody's on another place. Yeah.
It's less hard than it was before.
Okay.
Because before you'd say, I think that tastes good and it's cheap, I'll eat it. Right? Those are your variables.
Yeah.
Okay? And Big Food knows that, right? And they're going to use that against you.
Yeah.
And there's still a great number of people who say, well, I should save as much money as I can on my food. And my perspective is I should feel as good as possible after I eat and live as long as possible after I eat and save as much money as possible in that order. But it's all about how I feel after I eat.
Yeah.
And then it's about flavor after that. So what I would just say there is we now have more information about what's likely to work for you. So before it was a shot in the dark.
Yeah.
Now it's at least a shot in the right direction in the dark.
Exactly. Okay, we're still in the morning ritual. You just dropped the school.
Dropped the kids off at school. Yeah. I come back and I run my day based on a calendar. To-do lists just create stress. It's terrible. So I have an hour of biohacking scheduled on my calendar. And then I might do, I have an oxyhealth hyperbaric chamber, like a hard-sided hyperbaric chamber. I might do cryotherapy. I might do whole body vibration. I might do pulse electromagnetic frequencies. I might do neurofeedback from 40 years of Zen. And I have all this at home. So I have a full upgrade lab set up there. And I mean, it's a million-dollar R&D lab that I used to start a franchise. So it's a luxury.
You have your own upgrade lab at home.
Absolutely. Yeah, of course. That's where I created Upgrade Labs. Was in a barn where my studio is upstairs. Kind of, actually, it feels kind of like your place. I've got an old radio, not an old jukebox, but pretty similar.
Wow, that's a great morning ritual. And do you have like an evening thing?
Evening, it's really about darkness. So at home, I have a remote control. I turn off the lights and I turn on the red lights. And people think it's either like a whorehouse. I mean, Amsterdam Red Light District is called that for a reason, right? Or it's a submarine or a vampire thing. It depends on which neighbor I'm talking to. But they think I'm weird. And man, I sleep so much better than I ever have. My kids are used to it. They're teenagers now. They've never had a problem staying asleep all night. They've always woken up, go into the bathroom where there's a red light, and they go back to bed. But most kids wake up and they can't go back to sleep because they turn the lights on, and then their parents don't sleep for 10 years. So thank goodness I dodged that. But it's about darkness. And I used to do a lot of work before bed when I was starting a company and working as an exec at another one. And now I don't usually do that. So after about 9 o'clock, it's mostly relaxation, sometimes meditation, and a lot of times just reading.
Yeah.
Right. And bringing in usually more of like the kind of spiritual or just learning stuff. And to me, learning just makes me happy.
Losing weight is not how much you eat.
Well, it drives me nuts when people say just eat less and you'll lose weight. Because I did that when I weighed 300 pounds. I was religious. I went to the gym an hour and a half a day. I was doing half weights and half cardio. I went on a low-fat, low-calorie diet, and I was starving all the time. And I would just, every time I'd feel like that hunger pang, I'd just lean in and be like, that's a sign that I'm winning, right? And I did that for so long. And at the end of 18 months, I'm sitting at a fast food restaurant with my friends, and they're eating like double Western bacon cheeseburgers with fried stuff and whatever on them. And I'm having the chicken salad. But there's no dressing and there's no chicken. And I look at, I'm like, wait a minute. I eat less than all my friends. I'm the only one who exercises amongst my friends. And they're all thin and I'm not. And I thought, it's because I'm eating too much lettuce.
Yeah.
I did. And just one day I was like, this shit doesn't work.
No.
And that was what led eventually to biohacking. Because I'm like, I'm just going to do what works. I don't care if some magazine tells me it works. We didn't have health influencers back then. We had Men's Health magazine and all these crazy things.
Yeah.
And I said, I'm going to try all the stuff that shouldn't work, including going to bed and learning meditation. I only did that because the normal stuff didn't work. And I'm still miserable. I've already been divorced before I'm 30. Like, what the heck is going on here? I just want to do what works. And that's what biohacking is. You measure it. And if my advice doesn't work, do something else. I'll just tell you, my advice is pretty well tested and it's a good place to start.
Yeah.
And from there, branch out. And Kale's dumb.
Yeah. You mentioned that before. There are a lot of questions and there's one question and this has to do with Joe Rogan and I don't know the whole thing about it. Michel Voss, what was the deal with the mycotoxins?
Mycotoxins. Let's talk about those. Mycotoxins, it's a clinical name for toxins formed by mold. There's about 200 species of mold that makes really bad toxins for humans and animals. And it's such a problem that different governments around the world put limits in place for how many mycotoxins you can feed to cows and sheep and pigs or humans. And these are tied to cancer, heart disease, diabetes, in thousands of studies. In fact, about a quarter of our world's food supply gets lost from mold and spoilage in the field or during storage. It's that big of a thing. They won't feed moldy food to pregnant cows because it causes stillbirths, but they'll feed it to cows that we eat because, well, they can handle it even though it's not good for them or us. So coffee, I gave it up for 5 years because every time I would drink it, an hour later, I'd get like anxiety and jitters and like a headache and just like want to punch people more than normal. And I'm not that angry anymore. I'm actually pretty calm, but I was kind of a jerk when I was young. So I finally, after I came back from that trip to Tibet where I learned meditation, had yak butter tea, I had a cup of black coffee, really high-end good coffee. I was like, oh, I don't have any symptoms. I'm cured. I'm not allergic to coffee anymore. And the next day I had another cup of coffee from a different place and it knocked me out.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's not me. It's the coffee. Just like different pot has different strains and different qualities to change how you feel, right? Coffee's the same way. So I, after a lot of testing, figured out there's mold in coffee. And then I found out that in the US, there is no law protecting consumers from toxic mold in coffee, which means that when coffee is too moldy to sell in Europe or Japan or China, they will send it to the US and then we'll drink it. And then we act like Americans.
So it's an American thing.
It's actually America and Canada don't have laws. Not okay. That they always follow standards in Europe. But what I said was, I'm going to make coffee that's free of mold.
Yeah.
So I developed an 80-page process for making mold-free coffee.
But that's the whole thing that people are saying, yeah, that's just marketing. Mm-hmm. It's expensive coffee and there's not any problem with normal coffee.
You know, it's really funny that the people who say that are coffee producers. And it's such a problem that most countries around the world have regulations to protect us from this. But it's not a problem because a podcaster with a financial interest in a competitor tried to discredit me that way. Yeah, I'm talking about Joe Rogan.
Yeah.
So I was on Joe
Rogan.
The
Kill Man.
Yeah, I was on him like three times on the show and of like all the compilations. Oh, Dave's blog's amazing. It changed my life. And I think that Bulletproof Coffee really did change his brain. But when he invested in a competitor and decided to do things he did, it was funny. He deleted my episodes from Spotify.
Yeah, yeah,
but you know what? Thank you, Joe. Love you, brother.
Okay, then. Some other questions. Myri, hacks to speed up your metabolism.
Speeding up metabolism.
Yeah.
Well, one of the best things you could ever do is go back to sleepwithdave.com. Just learn how to sleep better. Your metabolism will speed up. It's such a huge thing. It's so easy to do and it's free. It's free to get better sleep. So from there, intermittent fasting, and my most recent book is Fast This Way. You can go to fastwithdave.com and I'll teach you how to do that for free as well. I turn all my books into courses and give them away because some people don't learn from reading. And you don't have to buy the book if you don't want to. I just want people to know this stuff because, frankly, if they know it, they'll be nicer and then they'll be nicer to me and each other. Like everybody wins.
Win-win.
So with intermittent fasting, it's not as bad as people think. All you have to do is have dinner a little bit earlier and then have breakfast a little bit later. And you magically went like 14 hours without food in your stomach. Like you can do this. It's not running a marathon. It's just doable. And if you get up to about 18 hours, your metabolism will naturally speed up. And don't eat after the sun goes down. Although where we are now in Amsterdam or Canada, sun goes down at midnight. So just don't eat after like 8 p.m.
Talking about the whole intermittent fasting thing. There was a guy here, a Dutch guy, Richard Tellet. He learned me a lot about this, but he is also saying drink a lot of water, like bulk drinking. And in this Bulletproof book, you are saying don't do that. And I was texting him and like I said, what should I do now? He said, I don't know if they've ever heard about intermittent drinking.
Oh, dry fasting, basically?
I don't know.
So there's something called a dry fast, and I didn't write about it in the book because it's pretty fringe for the world of fasting. You can go 2 or 3 days without drinking any water or eating any food, and that causes your cells to drop a lot of their water, and then they get rehydrated with clean water. It can be detoxing, can turn on cell renewal and repair. But you only want to do that if you're relatively healthy, because it's a pretty extreme thing. So I didn't want.
But if you drink all day, then there's always this small inflammation or.
Well, it's not bad inflammation. In fact, it's one of the things at Upgrade Labs that we measure. So we can measure using electricity whether there's more water inside or outside of cells. And water that's outside of cells is inflammation. And if there's not enough water inside cells, it's dehydration. So you can be inflamed and dehydrated, or you can be dehydrated and not inflamed, or vice versa.
Okay.
So what's controlling water in cells? It's not how much water you drink. You drink water, it makes you pee, right? So how'd that work? Well, if you have enough fiber in your gut, it'll hold water so it can absorb into your bloodstream a little bit better, and your plasma will go up, but it won't enter the cells. What's controlling how much goes into cells? It's minerals. And I wonder why there's minerals in Danger Coffee. So it's potassium, it's minerals, it's salt, right? In fact, it's more potassium than it is sodium for that. So it's electrolytes. And that means you can drink a lot less water if you're getting some electrolytes. And if you are constantly thirsty, like the way I was when I lived in a moldy house and I drank moldy coffee, I once did one of those like 24-hour urine collections. Yeah. I peed 7 liters of urine because I had so many toxins, I was craving water. Yeah. And here's something else really weird for the people who say, oh, these mold toxins in coffee aren't real. No, they are. Here's how you can tell. You drink a cup of coffee, and a half hour later, you really have to pee. And you pee, and your bladder wasn't full, but you really had to go. Why did you get a signal from your body to pee when your bladder wasn't full? Is it because your bladder's dumb? No, it's because the toxin in coffee is called ochratoxin A, and ochratoxin A is specifically toxic to your kidneys and bladder. So the body detects the toxin, and the body says, this is terrible. It actually pulls water out of your blood to dilute the toxin, and then it sends you a signal that says, hey, you big dummy, pee. And you go to the bathroom and you pee a half a cup and you go, what's
but
going on here?
This is great, Dave, because a lot of my listeners and watchers, they know this is one of my problems. Is this also has to do with drinking a lot of green tea?
Yes, especially if you're drinking Dragon Well green tea. There are certain types of green tea that have micro little fibers in them that specifically irritate the urinary tract. Do you drink a lot of Dragon Well?
No, it's called, it's Essentia with, how do you call it? With the citrus thing.
Oh, yeah, that's probably it, the citrus.
Yeah.
I went through, this is an embarrassing story.
Yuzu,
if we have time
with
for
yuzu
it.
Is it, yeah.
Oh, yuzu is a, Japanese citrus. Yeah. I like yuzu. So years ago when I was a raw vegan, like I said, I've tried everything. And I was pretty darn devout as a raw vegan. Should we pause for noise? Is it going to
matter? No, it's okay.
Okay, good. So I was a pretty devout raw vegan, and I would never eat meat. Everything had to be raw and unheated and just all this kind of crazy stuff. And I started having to pee a lot, like 20 times a day. And like, I don't want to wait. And so I went to the doctor and he's like, I don't know, it doesn't seem anything's wrong. So I went to an anti-aging doctor. Nothing seems wrong. So he sends me to the top urologist in San Francisco. The guy rams a camera in the out only hole for men, right? Which is one of the more traumatizing experiences I've had in a doctor's office. And I've had stem cells. I've had bone marrow taken out. Have my bone marrow. Don't stick a camera in there again. Anyway, he goes, well, I can't see anything wrong with your bladder, but you only have one kidney. I'm like, what? So that was how I found out.
Okay.
I have one kidney that's twice as big as a normal kidney, which means I'm more evolved than you because you still have two kidneys in case you get stabbed. Anyway, it's a weird thing. But I went home and I still had to pee. And I was really annoyed about this. So I just did a bunch of research. And it turns out I was eating a ton of raspberries every day. And by the end of the week after I bought them, they were getting moldy. So raspberries themselves contain ellagic acid, which irritates the urinary tract. And I was getting mold. So towards Thursday and Friday, I was really having to pee because I was hitting myself with a toxin and with an irritant. So it turns out it's probably not they're drinking too much. It's that you're either getting a toxin that requires excretion or an irritant. I'll bet you that it's something in the tea. Change brands of tea and see what happens.
Talking about fruit, there was this great conversation with a woman, Janneke van der Meulen, and she was talking about that we, in fact, should eat more fruit than vegetable all day?
Well, I don't think there's much evidence for that. The reason for that is that there is no fruit available in the environment around you for almost all of the year. So when the sun is high and fruit is ripe and on a tree, yes, during that 2-week period for that kind of fruit, you should definitely fatten yourself up on that, which is what it's designed for, so you can survive through the winter when there isn't any fruit. So if that's what she meant, I would totally support it. If she meant we should import our fruit from Chile to Holland in the middle of winter, that's batshit crazy.
Okay. Why are you so heavy against the vegan lifestyle?
Because I was a devout raw vegan and it made me profoundly ill, and it has made hundreds of thousands of people sick. It's given them Hashimoto's, which is an autoimmune condition of the thyroid. It's caused huge amounts of weak bones, brittle bones, and as it did for me, I shattered a couple teeth because I was losing minerals. Vegan diets pull minerals out of humans because of something called phytic acid. And this is part of my next book that's coming out. Phytic acid is something that humans cannot tolerate, and it blocks us from absorbing minerals, and it pulls minerals out of our bones and out of our cells. Plants make phytic acid to stop us from eating them because they can't run away from or hide from us. They have to kill us with toxins.
Yeah.
It stops overpredation. Cows can eat these types of things because they have 3 stomachs and they make phytase. We don't. So when you're eating these plant-based foods that are sold as being healthy, even though they make you hungry, they have the wrong fats for our biology, and they suck you dry of minerals, and these big companies have the gall to look you in the eye and tell you it's healthier for you and the planet, fuck those guys. It is not. I live on a regenerative farm where I'm building topsoil when those clowns are killing topsoil with glyphosate and bad farming practices. Good quality vegetables require animal poop. The big thing that comes from animals is poop. We need that poop to suck carbon out of the air. And if you think I'm some sort of a redneck hippie, you might have heard of Elon Musk's carbon capture XPRIZE, $100 million prize. Well, in order to get to that phase to be funded by Elon Musk, it takes $500,000, and it takes a prize committee. The first $50,000 into that prize was my $50,000 as a donation when I was campaigning to get a group of billionaires to support a carbon capture XPRIZE because it matters. But the biggest carbon capture technology on the planet is soil. And if you kill the animals that make the soil because you don't know how life works, and you eat a fake burger and feel like shit and treat other people like shit because you don't know how life works, oh, and you become infertile because you don't know how life works, that's the world that we're going to with a vegan agenda.
But how do you, why do you say kill the, because vegans don't say that there shouldn't be animals?
Literally, the CEO of Impossible Foods on video in the last week just said that if he had the Thanos power on cows, he'd kill at least half the cows right now because he doesn't like them walking around. What a vegan diet means is that everyone will eat corn and soy, and there will be no more land left for these animals that are the most important part of the food chain for humans. We need them to make our vegetables, and cows eat food that we can't eat and turn it into delicious and juicy ribeye steaks.
And how often do you eat meat?
Do I eat meat? I eat meat almost every day. And the vast majority of the meat that I eat, I grow myself on my farm.
You travel a lot.
I do.
How do you do it with food in airplanes, on airports? Or do you fast, or do you take something with you? Or
you have to be crazy to eat airplane food. And there's 2 reasons for that. One is it's always bad. And 2 is that eating at altitude like that always makes you feel bad because you don't have any air. You get bloated. It's just a bad idea. So what I do in airplanes is, and I just flew to Dubai, which is, I don't know, like 24 hours of flight time. You just don't eat. Uh-huh. If you've learned how to intermittent fast, you're not even hungry. And if you're really worried about it, have some coffee. And if you really want to be fancy about it, have some powdered butter MCT oil stuff in your coffee. And that's what I do reliably. And when you do that, strangely, if you do that and wear the glasses, you don't get jet lag anywhere on the planet.
No.
So I don't get jet lag anymore because I don't eat on airplanes and because I control my light exposure. So just don't do that. And when I'm traveling at a place like this, I pay attention to the type of food at a restaurant. I don't eat industrial meat. So I'll usually eat lamb because it's grass-fed by its nature, or I'll eat fish. And I'll eat fish that's wild caught instead of farmed fish, because farmed fish are really bad for the oceans.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then I eat, by the way, I'll eat fat, of course, like butter or MCT oil or olive oil. And I'll eat some veggies, the less inflammatory ones. But back to the person who came on your show, who said eat fruit instead of veggies. Generally speaking, if fruit's in season, it's going to be better than most veggies, because many veggies are inflammatory. Yeah. That's part of the Bulletproof Diet. When I talk about that.
Okay, the last question, because we have to wrap up, and I hope to speak to you someday with a lot of other topics, mm-hmm. But maybe we can do it online, whatever. What role will biohacking have in the medicine world in the future?
There will be a merging of biohacking and medicine. And part of this is going to be deregulation of medicine. Right now, the pharmaceutical companies use medical regulation to control what doctors are allowed to do, which is absolutely against human prospering and against human freedom. That's right at the end of its sustainability. So what's going to happen is doctors, and it's already happening now, mm-hmm. if you go to the American Academy of Anti-Aging Medicine, any of these things, you see that so many of the doctors identify as biohackers, especially the younger ones. And they're saying, this is what I want to do. And they will opt out of hospitals. Like, I would never do that. I wouldn't send my father there. I'm not going to go work there. I'm going to make people well. So it's going to happen because we demand it, and because doctors who are healers want to do it. And these big regulated hospital things with insurance companies, if we do biohacking right, they'll be empty.
Richard, the guy, I talked about this with the bulk drinking, he is asking, you are a big player. What kind of counterforce do you feel?
Counterforce? Oh, to what I do?
Yeah.
You know, I was going to be on a stage with Bill Clinton and Goldie Hawn at an event, and they canceled me 2 weeks before the event. Because I retweeted a letter from airline CEOs with scientific references that said there's enough clean air on airplanes that maybe we don't have to make five-year-olds wear a mask for 12 hours on a flight because science. And apparently that was politically incorrect. But you know what? That's just fine, right? That happens.
Maybe it gives you even more power,
It maybe, but I did get shadow banned for almost a year during the pandemic. I have always said, I believe that you and your doctor have a right to decide what happens to your body, that a bureaucrat never has the right to tell you what to do with your biology, because bureaucrats, A, they only became bureaucrats because they couldn't get a real job. And also B, they don't know what the fuck they're talking about.
No.
So it's my job to decide, and it's my job to hire the doctor or, frankly, the shaman or whatever else I want. And it's my job to either run my life or not run my life. So I just kept talking about that, saying it's totally fine to get whatever treatment you want to get.
Yeah.
And I don't care if it's a vaccine, and I don't care if it's some other medication that's proven to work in hundreds of studies that you're not allowed to talk about. So that cost me. But before that, the biggest thing comes from radical vegans.
Yeah.
And radical vegans, in fact, I've interviewed the founder of PETA. His daughter is on the carnivore diet.
Okay.
And she talked on my show on the Human Upgrade about the roots of the vegan diet. And being here in Europe, it was World War II. The founder of PETA, which is the biggest group promoting the vegan diet. They don't care about your health.
No.
The guy was traumatized by what he saw in concentration camps. He saw something in animals that reminded him of that, saying we can't treat animals the way we treated humans like animals there. And it's just post-traumatic stress disorder.
Of course, but if you like, we'll see in the spiritual way,
mm-hmm.
things have to change with, if you think about energy and how.
Oh, industrial meat has to change.
No,
it doesn't mean we have to eat plants.
No,
it's different, right?
Okay.
Meat should be local, and distributed agriculture builds soil, builds jobs, builds communities, and concentrated agriculture just builds like waste ponds full of crap and a lot of antibiotic resistance. It is terrible what we're doing.
Yeah.
But the answer is not to starve humans and give us the equivalent of dog food, you know, ground up kibble for humans. We don't want to do that because that makes us unhappy. It's a waste. It's so wasteful. So what we must do is bring back distributed food generation, which is what the big companies don't want. And it's what, you know, frankly, a lot of the big investors don't want, but I don't care what they want.
What do you think of death?
you know, I'm completely comfortable with death.
Yeah.
Didn't not used afraid. To be.
Oh, didn't used to be. Okay.
No, here's why. So I'm a pretty rational guy. And I started out thinking pretty much I'm agnostic because I'm rational, but probably more atheist if I had to bet. I've seen plenty of stuff from, in fact, the most of it from neurofeedback, some of it from holotropic breathing and plant medicine. And mm-hmm. also I've studied with like masters from different lineages around the world. It's way more complex than we think. And what I decided is that I believe in reincarnation. Not just because I've seen some of my past lives, but it's the only rational belief you can have. And here's why. Okay. If you decide reincarnation is real, you don't have to worry about dying because you get to come back and do it again. You just hit game over, you know, restart the game. Yeah. Okay. If you believe in that, you'll be calm about death. If you're wrong, you won't know it. There you go. Okay. You don't have to be afraid of death. Just tell yourself, you know what, this video game, when it's over, I'll drop another quarter in the machine and I'm going to do it.
There you go.
Nice. I've also done a lot of, you know, this reset process and forgiveness and trauma release and EMDR and all the other stuff you do so that your body is not afraid of death, because you can rationally not be afraid of death and your body can be absolutely terrified of death. And the deal is, how do you get your body to not be afraid of it? And sometimes it requires near death. In fact, almost every shamanic lineage around the planet, initiation is a near-death experience.
Exactly.
And so facing that, yeah, that matters. And I've certainly done that kind of work. And yeah, you can go to some really, really scary places, but then eventually realize, what's the worst that could happen? I could die.
Yeah. And do you still have any goals? Any?
Mostly around enlightenment is a pretty good idea, but also figuring out the technologies and the ways to help other people drop stress and trauma. I know that the paths to enlightenment that have been mapped out by different cultures for thousands of years around the planet, they did it without any science.
No, but that's the whole thing with, for example, 40 Years of Zen. Yeah. It's ancient wisdom meets modern neuroscience.
Yeah. We're taking the data and we're proving that the old stuff works and we're tuning it. And I know, because when I bring in someone who's already a guru from a lineage and we look at their brainwaves and they do the stuff, they go, oh, I missed that. And then they're like, they're tweaking their practice and it's so cool. So we're going to make it so that everyone, including people in high school, get access to the kind of tech that lets them stop being reactive and programmable. We're going to make everyone on the planet really dangerous, because who knows what they might do? They might do the right thing, even when they're told to do the wrong thing. They might have so much energy that they could think before they act. So I want to make a society full of conscious people.
Great. If you ever have the possibility to invite a Dutch guy to your podcast, do Casper Focus. He's like Hack Your State. I think you will love him.
All right.
How do you want to be remembered, Dave?
I don't want to be remembered by anyone except my kids.
Yeah, but like, well, this is the political correct answer.
No, it's not political correct. Who the fuck cares? I'll be dead.
Yeah, of course. But people will remember you.
It doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't matter. But
I'm not going to tell you who I was, but I know exactly who I was before. You could find my body somewhere on the planet where people go to look at it.
Yeah.
It doesn't fucking matter.
No.
It doesn't matter. When you're dead, you're done with that game. It is just not important. What matters is the impact you had, the ripples that you had. Of course. Like, I want people to be noticeably better after I'm done. I would hope everyone else on the planet wants the same thing, but I don't care if my name is on it. I don't care if anyone remembers me. It's not important. What they should remember is that vegan diets are stupid. That would be awesome.
Wow. Is that the big thing of the...
Right now, it's one of the things I'm most concerned about. Yeah. For destruction of the environment and destruction of fertility and IQ in humans. Yeah. It's that big of a deal. And it comes not from science. It comes not from helping the environment. It comes from trauma.
But if... Yeah, okay. But if you're talking about the ripple effect, shouldn't it be better that a lot of people will try vegan and will eat less meat, then the big corporates are maybe getting stuck, and then we go to the farms in the neighborhood.
The big corporates want you to go vegan because they're going to sell you wheat flakes at the same price as steak. Like, it's in their interest. You're playing into their hands if you think fake food is going to be against the big corporate America. They're literally going, next we'll feed them crickets. It's gonna be so good. Like, screw those guys. That's not how it works. So what I want people to do is realize that the amount of energy that you have every day is entirely up to you. It's how do you waste less energy and how do you make sure your body gets the right nutrients it needs? And for the vast, vast majority of humans, it requires healthy animals as a part of your diet. Unfortunately, big industry doesn't want to sell you healthy animals or healthy plants. No. They want to sell you cheap plants and cheap animals. And that's not how it works. So what I want people to know is, you know what? Whenever possible, I'm going to support a local farmer because that makes the world a better place. You've got to start there because if you say, I'm going to become fully enlightened and I'm eating corn nuggets and soy balls, seriously, man, it's not going to work. No.
Thank you so much, Dave, for your time, for inspiration, for being here. Let's talk again someday. I hope so.
I would love to, Hill. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you so much. En dit gaat een hoop stof doen opwaaien. Ik ben heel benieuwd wat je vindt. Laat het onder in de reactie. Hij heeft in ieder geval gekieteld en getriggerd, zoals hij al zijn leven lang doet. It was really an honor. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Hey, can you tell me in Dutch how to say kale sucks?
Ja, dus kale is, hoe noem je dat weer? Boerenkool?
Boerenkool?
Ja, boerenkool. Ja, het sucks. Ja, yeah, well, sucks is kind of Dutch also.
Per gold sucks.
Ja.
Yeah. For the win.
Okay, then. Dit was Koekeroe. Tot de volgende. Zonnegroet. Hoi.
Dankjewel voor het luisteren. Leuk dat je het hele gesprek gecheckt hebt. En ik kom je dan toch nog even binnenvallen om een kleine reminder te doen. Niet pushy, relaxed, in stilte. Nou, niet in stilte, want ik praat. Maar heb je jezelf al aangemeld? Ja. Koekeroe.nl/meditatie. Anders kan je dat nu doen. Kukuru, dat is kukuru.nl/meditatie. Meditatie met een i, want dat is wat we gaan doen. Van 1 tot 10 mei, en het is helemaal gratis, hè, het live kijken. Kukuru.nl/meditatie.